But just before we get to the agenda, there are a few apologies I want to register. There is an apology from the Minister of Defence. There is an apology from the Deputy Minister of Defence. Minister of Defence and Military Veterans, Deputy Minister of Defence and Military Veterans. I also have an apology from Inkosi Jerekulu. There is an apology from Ms. Khwase. And there is this last apology. It's from... Who is this from, Brian? Honorable Mage. All right, at Honorable Mage. So those are the apologies for today that I registered. we have a new member. We have established a tradition. That when there is a new member joining the committee, we let him sing for us. And then would you do the honors, please? May you introduce.
thank you, Chair. My name is Tseko Mafanya, and that is the name of my song. Thank you very much.
thank you so much, colleague. we have joined a family. I'm sure you might have seen it in Parliament that it's one committee where there is less disagreement, and because we're dealing with our pride. Issues of national importance, or things general. You heard it. It just walked in, but I was able to summarize it. Yeah. Thank you so much. Right, colleagues. I'm not doing. I don't want to waste too much time. It's cyber defense, and I know it's dealing with a sensitive area. So it means this is. The meeting is open, so we would have to be circumspect in the manner we raise issues, and we don't want to expose ourselves too much, more than the exposure that we are already experiencing. And then, colleagues, that takes care of my opening. Major General, you'll introduce the team. I think you are the one who will be leading in the presentation. You'll introduce the team and then launch into the presentation. Can I give you 30 minutes? 30 minutes will be fine. I'm timing you now. All right, over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and I would like to greet yourself and all the other honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Defense. I'm Major General Ngobo from Defense Intelligence. I'm Chief Director Collection, and as part of my my delegation or my team on my right, excuse me, I have Mr. Ntlantla Mabaso, who's heading the Cybersecurity Department of AMSCO. And on my left, I've got Ismail Matebula, who's also a member of the Cybersecurity Department of AMSCO. I'm sure you are all...
You skip one, two, three.
Yes, yeah. Okay.
Sure.
Okay. I would then like to proceed with the presentation. By way of introduction, we say that in order for us to understand the strategic nature of the cyber threats, it is important to understand the types of attacks and the actors involved in these attacks. And on this slide, basically, we show different tiers of attackers. And you will notice that tier 1 and tier 2, basically, these are at a lower level, where the attackers tend to attack systems and account exploits. And in our view, we believe that this is currently most of what we have in South Africa happening, and we believe that this is the area within which we do have some capacity to, you know, to mitigate and also to respond. But the tier 3 going up, you know, it starts to involve crime groups and hacktivists, some of whom may be working on behalf of other foreign governments. Tier 4, for example, they've got organized crime groups and cyber mercenaries who can be bought by anyone to attack any other person because of the skills that they possess. So also the objectives seem to become even much more complicated as you go up. And the role players also become much more sophisticated as you go up. So the higher you go up in terms of this particular pyramid, you know, at a lower level you have individuals and smaller groups. But at the highest level, you have mostly governments getting involved, you know, in trying to sabotage the economies of another government, or, you know, for one reason or another. And this is where the level of sophistication is much, much bigger. And perhaps this is the area within which we need to find ourselves, or rather develop capacity to mitigate and to respond to this kind of attacks. Currently, we can say confidently, we can actually deal with tier 1 and tier 2. With due respect, honorable members, I also, as I'm presenting, I'm also assuming that you would have gone through the presentations before. So I'm not going to explain some of the things that I already written on the document itself. The aim of our presentation is to present the cyber defense strategy of the cyber, of the Department of Defense. And in terms of our scope, we will start with the National Cyber Security Policy Framework, because it gives the origin of all the efforts towards developing cyber security capacity within the Department of Defense. We'll then follow by looking at our role and what the cyber crimes and cybersecurity bill was saying, but acknowledging the fact that we don't anymore have the cyber crimes and cybersecurity bill. There was a bit of a challenge to a point where what was then decided was that we'll pursue the cyber crimes bill, which was the initiative more of the police. Because there was a bit of debate around the issue of the cybersecurity bill. But we'll explain part of that when we get there. And then we'll quickly just look at the current status, and then we focus mainly on the elements of the strategy itself. What exactly does this particular strategy look at? What does it intend to achieve? And then the strategic positioning of, you know, ourselves as a of the cyber command. And where we want to go to. Honorable members would also wish to recall that on the 7th of March 2012, Cabinet approved the National Cyber Security Policy Framework. And as a result, the document itself, the National Cyber Security Policy Framework, stipulates under cyber warfare on point 13, section 13.1, it states as follows: that in order to protect its interests in the event of a cyber war, a cyber defense capacity has to be built. The National Cyber Security Policy Framework thus promotes that a cyber defense strategy that is informed by the national security strategy of South Africa be developed, guided by the Justice Crime Prevention and Security Cybersecurity Response Committee. And you would also wish to recall that we do have already the Cybersecurity Response Committee, which is chaired by the State Security Agency. And ourselves as defense, we also participate there. And I must say that perhaps we also play a very, very prominent role. Section 16.5 states that the Department of Defense and military veterans has the overall responsibility for coordination, accountability, and implementation of cyber defense measures in the Republic of South Africa as an integral part of its national defense mandate. To this end, the department will develop policies and strategies pursuant to its core mandates. Honorable members, I would like to emphasize the part that says the Department of Defense and Military Veterans has the overall responsibility for coordination, accountability, and implementation of cyber defense measures in the Republic of South Africa. We are not limited only just to the defense environment only. We actually have a national responsibility in this regard. And the same national cybersecurity policy envisages to achieve the following deliverables. One is the safer and more secure cyberspace, the establishment of institutional structures to support a coordinated approach, identification and protection of national critical information infrastructure, secure e-environment that stimulates economic growth and competitiveness, promotion of national research and development, effective prevention and combating of cybercrime, enhanced management of cybersecurity. As I had indicated earlier on, Honorable Chair, that at some point we did have something called the Cyber Crimes and Cybersecurity Bill. The first version to be drafted was produced in 2015. If one looks at that version, one would find that Chapter 10 deals with structures to deal with cybersecurity. And it states that under Section 54.3A1, Roman Figure 1 to Roman Figure 2, it states that, you know, it has to establish and maintain a cyber offensive and defensive capacity. So not only defensive, but also offensive capacity, though we envisage a defensive posture. By implication, we should retain capacity to conduct offensive. Cooperation with any institution of higher learning in the Republic or elsewhere. Develop and implement accredited training programs for members of the South African National Defense Force. And this part suggests that we need to develop an in-house capacity to train people in cyber security and cyber defense, as opposed to getting people trained externally. In terms of the national cyber security policy framework, as well as the cyber crimes and cyber bill, cyber security bill of 2015, maybe before I get to that, I must indicate that, as I indicated earlier on, that what we have now is the cyber crimes bill. I'm not quite sure whether this has been approved as yet. There was a bit of a debate. The Cyber Crimes and Cyber Security Bill of 2015, when you look at the Cyber Crimes and Cyber Security Bill of 2017, there are aspects that have been taken out, especially the aspects that affirms the overall responsibility by the defense was removed. And that's one of the contention that we had. We also presented this to the Portfolio Committee on Telecommunications. We indicated this particular problem, that we are not happy with the cyber crimes and cyber security bill of 2017, because it moves away from what was originally written. That paragraph, that section 53 was completely removed, and section 55, I think, was also completely removed. Within the cyber crimes and cyber security bill of 2015. there were aspects that pertained to the role of the defense, of the Department of Defense, which on the 2017 version had been removed. So we raised that particular concern, and we were sent back to say, let's go back and then find a way of agreeing with the other role players. However, there was that disagreement which led to a decision that maybe let's pursue the cyber crimes so that the police can be empowered to execute their job.
Sorry, Chair. So in other words, you're referring back to that page 6 where you said 16.5, where that bill was saying an implementation of the Cyber Defence Force in the Republic, that part has then been removed from the 2017 bill, if I read you correct.
Did the whole of Section 54?
Section 53 and Section 55, if I remember well. Section 53 to Section 55, if I recall well. So that particular role of the defense was officially removed. Section 55, yes.
It was removed when a decision was taken that they must not pursue with a cyber crime and cyber security bill. It must be cyber crime bill. And
no.
Because there was no full agreement on the cyber security side of things. So it means that one is still coming, the cyber security one.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. It's slightly the other way around. Because we couldn't come into agreement, the police felt that there was no agreement, and there was no disagreement around the issue of what the police had contributed, which is the cybercrime side of things. Because there was no disagreement there, let them proceed. And then the cybersecurity part was the one that becomes, you know, contentious. Because the 2015, the original version, had the defense part. The 2017 part, the defense part had been removed. Okay.
But that means that there must now be sometime a bill come before us or before Parliament on cyber security and the role of the system spins, I assume.
In actual fact, on slide number 10, if we could go to slide number 10. Yeah. That is the clause, it's clause 55, the one I was referring to. The Cybercrime and Cybersecurity Bill 2015, clause 55.1 says, the cabinet member responsible for defense must, in consultation with the cabinet member responsible for national financial matters, establish a cyber command as part of the intelligence division of the South African National Defense Force. Equip, operate, and maintain the cyber command. This section has been removed in the latest version, meaning in the 2017 version. In the 2015 version, this comes up. But in the 2017 version, it doesn't come up. So we actually, by implication, it removes the legislative, what do you call, tool for the establishment of the cyber command. And to move on to the current status, we have been able to, firstly, I wish to indicate that the cyber defense strategy was first presented to the cyber defense Indaba, which was held at Girotech on the 3rd of July 2018, and it was well received. A decision was taken that it should be presented at the cyber defense at the plenary defense staff council on the 17th of July the same year, and this was done. And it was immediately approved without any reservations. Since that time, I must indicate, Honorable Member, Chair and Honorable Members, that we have been able to establish a limited security operations center, which is currently located at AMSCO, which was the second SOC that was established. But I must also indicate that we have been able to establish one within the Navy, which is located at the Simonstown area. So at the time of drafting the strategy, we had not established the one at Simonstown. So we really have three SOCs developed. And certain activities have already been taken place to indicate that we are not necessarily waiting for all approval, but are continuing to do certain things. We were able to come to the rescue of AMSCO when AMSCO was attacked. We were able to come to the rescue of the South African Civil Association Authority during the year last year when SACA was actually attacked. I'm proud to say it was members of defense that came and resolved the problem at SACA, to the extent that the CEO of SACA was contemplating terminating the contract with the private companies that were employed there, because she felt that they're paying a lot of money and yet defense can solve the problems. They couldn't solve the problem. We were able to respond also to cyber attacks against SASA, City Power, SSA, and SAA. I must indicate that here we also encountered various challenges. In some instances, our people would come ready to assist and not being given the necessary, you know, leeway to do all the things they wish to do. In some instances, they were completely denied access to systems. City Power, for example, felt that they were able to handle the matter on their own. They did not need our assistance. We also had the challenge, a bit of a challenge, but we were well received, but there were delays in according our members or providing them with the necessary information when the city of Joburg was attacked. But finally, they did give us the information. And we feel that had the city of Joburg collaborated with us much earlier, we could have saved the city of Joburg a lot of money in terms of the resources they spent to try and resolve the problem. The next slide basically is just meant to give an indication of where we are against some of the top countries in terms of cyber security or cyber defense. You will see that China has about 90,000 known or at least declared cyber security operators. And we are saying declared because we believe there's quite a number that are not registered as part of government, but are operating for the interest of the Chinese government. Israel have got 15,000, North Korea 15,000, but if you look at the African continent, for example, you find a small country like Rwanda, which has got a component of about 1,800 cyber warriors. And ourselves, for now, we have developed or have trained up to just above 100 operatives. But again, we are not necessarily, or not all of these people are at the levels where we would like them to be. We would prefer that at least we've got a significant number at what you call the tier 7 level of that pyramid, people who are capable of responding to that level. Right now, we are much more at a much lesser, lower tiers of cyber security. And if we look at the escalation, just if we take the United States of America alone, if you look at the escalation on slide 13, we wanted to show this, that we wanted to use this to indicate the policy adopted by the American government in relation to cyber security and cyber defense, that there has been a constant escalation in the amount of funds that have been allocated for cyber security. And last year, President Trump did indicate that they are now, as a matter of policy, going to adopt cyber as part of the tools of warfare that they're going to apply. And we perhaps might arguably say that we have seen this in action. You may wish to recall, honorable members, that in the endeavors of the U.S. government to topple President Maduro in Venezuela, one of the things that also occurred was that there was an attack against the grid in the city of Caracas, the capital. that lasted for months in a blackout. So right now we're talking about load shedding that pushes us to start 30 minutes later. But a cyber attack can push us to start 3 months later. That's the challenge that we are faced with should we be attacked. In terms of the strategy, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we adopted the following vision. We said that the vision of the Cyber Command is that a Cyber Command should be a globally competitive, or should develop a globally competitive cyber defense capability that serves as a strategic reserve of the Commander-in-Chief of the South African National Defense Force. And there's a specific reason why we referred to this as a strategic reserve. Because if we quickly go to slide 7, just go back a little bit. There's a part that refers to secure e-environment that stimulates economic growth and competitiveness. That much as we are talking of a cyber defense capability, it becomes a strategic reserve of the president in the sense that should the president deem it necessary to utilize this capability for economic purposes, we are ready to do that. We won't be necessarily doing it on our own, but if we are structured to do that, we'll be willing, more than willing to do it. Because it is a resource that we have for warfare. The mission of the Cyber Command and the end state. The mission is to maintain a safe, secure, and resilient national critical information infrastructure and DoD command and control computers and communication infrastructure, intelligence and information, reconnaissance and surveillance capability, whilst pursuing a state of cyber sovereignty. And by cyber sovereignty, we are suggesting here that we shouldn't be dependent on anyone to a point of being manipulated. So in essence, we shouldn't even be relying on any other country or private company which is non-South African in terms of equipment, in terms of software, in terms of anything cyber-related. We should be able to do things on our own. If we do that, we would have achieved a state of cyber sovereignty. The desired end state is that the Republic of South Africa's national critical information infrastructure should be insulated from cyber attacks and all major cyber threats against the DoD's C4I3 RF have been neutralized through sovereign and indigenized technology. And I want to emphasize sovereign and indigenized technology, manned by a highly skilled human resource component that is a thought leader on matters of cyber defense nationally and globally. Our philosophy is that we envisage a resilient cyber defense capability developed through a meticulous process of recruitment and training of highly skilled and patriotic cyber workforce, guided by a visionary leadership as well as high levels of innovation, research and development of cutting-edge sovereign technologies. And sovereign technologies keep kind of forms a golden thread here, keeps coming up from time to time. And our values, adaptability, which in our case we see this as being the ability to cope with new cyber threats as they evolve. Patriotism, which implies that the cyber workforce serves the country with unwavering loyalty and commitment. You don't want a cyber operator to have challenges to a point of being disgruntled and want to act against the state, because then one individual becoming an enemy of the state in this particular environment can be can have dire consequences. Agility, the ability to think and act timelessly as the situation changes. Defense digital diplomacy. This because we realize that cyber security cannot be attained by any specific country working alone. there may be a need to cooperate with other states to make sure that we ensure security for each other, but also to participate in international conventions relating to issues of cyber security and development of alliances and strategic partners. The following goals and objectives have been identified in terms of the strategy. Goal number one, we said that we need to look to start developing cyber defense capabilities. And goal number two, cyber security awareness, research and training. And here we emphasize the issue of securitizing the DoD environment, digitizing the military, and then weaponizing the DoD, cyber weaponizing the DoD. What we mean by this is that you can utilize cyber to achieve certain objectives. If we may quote perhaps one of the strategic thinkers or strategists, military strategists of the olden days in China, Sun Tzu, he once said, to subdue the enemy without fighting is the acme of strategy. And we found that for the first time in the history of mankind, mankind has been presented with an ability to subdue the enemy without fighting. And cyber does exactly that. A country can be, you know, forced into its knees without firing a single shot. Parliament can be caused to start 30 minutes later without firing a single shot, you know, just on a lighter note.
That's scary.
True. And goal number three, national and international coordination and collaboration. This is more at the level of digital diplomacy, you know, making sure that we cooperate with our neighbors. And I must indicate that within the SADC, on the organ side of SADC, there's a structure called the Defense Intelligence Standing Committee, which used to be referred to as the Intelligence Sub-Sub Committee of the organ. Within that structure, there was a meeting held about last week in Botswana. Amongst other things, the issue of cyber is one of the agenda points there, because we want to look at, you know, ensuring that SADC does develop a cyber capability. Okay, can we move to slide number, is it 24? In the interest of time, I'll just skip quite a few slides that just relates to the strategic positioning of, you know, the cyber command. Slide number 24 relates to the qualitative indicators for the cyber command. The first part says ordinary, which means others control our destiny. This is where we rely on foreign technology, do not develop our own technology, do not develop our own software, you know, and as a result, do not even develop our own thinking in terms of cyber. So we read books written by the Chinese or the Americans or the Russians or somebody else. We need to go reach a stage where we write the books about cyber security and become thought leaders in this regard. We could say that we are at least... Our prospects are good. This is when we implement other people's ideas well. We still don't generate ideas ourselves, but we do what others tell us should be done, but we do it well. And then we allocate resources and we do everything else, but still utilizing their own technology. but at least we can still mitigate a lot of these threats. But we'll reach great, which is where we want to go to, from good to great, only when other people implement our ideas. By implication, we've become thought leaders in this regard. And we can only get to that point when we've generated the capacity to develop our own technology. And as we develop our own technology, we are able to write books about what we are developing, and also coming up with our own ideas, developing our own software, and making sure that we're self-reliant in this regard. And this is where we should be aiming to as a country. Without really dwelling much on the cyber command structure, because it's not yet approved, one can just mention that this constituted the bare minimum that we can have. It's not necessarily the ultimate. So it's the bare minimum structure that we think we can have in order to mitigate some of the threats that South Africa is facing and can face in future. Excuse me. And of importance for this strategy also are the critical success factors, which, if not achieved, we will have a challenge in developing the cyber command. The first one, a well-known one for that matter, is the issue of the budget. If funds are not availed for the establishment of the cyber command, we may not be able to establish this particular cyber command. The type of equipment needed here, the type of training and so on, require that resources should be provided in this regard, and adequately so. Approval and funding of the cyber command structure as well as the action plan. And then also development of sovereign technology and indigenization. By implication, we need to develop our own technology, computers, servers, printers, everything that is IT. If we cannot do that, we need to develop capacity to indigenize whatever we buy. We buy it from France, it comes to South Africa. Before it can be utilized, it goes to a factory where we remove things, put in things to a point where the original equipment manufacturer cannot influence the very same instruments or equipment that has been bought from their side. And we say that we need to maintain or develop a highly skilled workforce. By implication, here we can train people to the level of being a highly skilled workforce. But we can as well recruit from outside the Defense Force those skills that we don't have internally within the Department of Defense Force. But crucial in this also, because any highly skilled employee tends to be of high demand elsewhere. What becomes crucial also here is the issue of retention. We need to look at ways of making sure that these people are happy and well taken care of. And then we need to develop solid operating processes and procedures. And here we're looking at the issue of developing at a national level within the Cyber Security Response Committee of the JCPS cluster, the need to develop a national standing operating procedure so that they should be known by everybody else, to a point where if the city of Joburg is attacked, whoever is in charge of cybersecurity knows very well what's the command line, the channel of command, or the communication line, the channel of command to report to, up to a point where everybody is aware that an attack has taken place in a particular area and is ready to respond. I indicated earlier on that in some instances when we are responding to some of the attacks, our people were also not well received in some of the environments. It's precisely because this kind of national standing operating procedure has not been fully developed and projected to all the departments for them to adopt and, you know, utilize. And lastly is close cooperation. And we think this is very, very critical, because cybersecurity cannot be this one thing done by the security sector only. You need the involvement of the defense industry, what used to be termed the South African defense-related industry. We need to get
to obtain the buy-in of the local private sector. One may be surprised if one does an evaluation or rather a study of how many companies in South Africa are involved in IT. It suggests that as a country we may not need to buy things from outside. If we come together and instruct some of these private companies to develop things that we want to utilize and guide them to say, can you develop in this direction, can you, you know, then they can be of assistance, you know. Similarly, also institutions of research and institutions of higher learning, because they teach IT, so we may need, you know, the knowledge and the experience of some of the lecturers and some of the research institutions. So as government, when we need research to be done, we don't necessarily have to do it ourselves. We can actually, you know, request a research institution to do research for us. So in essence, all it says is that we need some kind of a compact between government, institutions, private sector, you know, defense industry, and all the stakeholders, and even individuals, really, who are knowledgeable in this regard. If you come to think of the fact that one of the young men who, at the age of 13, attacked the servers of the Federal Bureau of Investigation in the United States is now currently owns a very big company. You know, because after determining that it is this young boy, 13 years old, who has actually breached our system, they actually took him in and worked with him to a point where he developed the ability to start his own company. So these are things that we can do with individuals in South Africa. And in conclusion, we say that we need to establish the Cyber Command as a force multiplier in the protection of the national critical information infrastructure and the DoD's command and control, computers, communication, infrastructure, intelligence and information, reconnaissance and surveillance, and the attainment of national interest. And perhaps one may also underline the last part, the attainment of national interest. This is one tool that can be utilized to attain various national objectives, not just defense only. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And on a later note, General Olomisa will tell us how he came into possession of apartheid files. Maybe he breached the security. That was then. All right. Maybe they is. All right, colleagues, this is where we are. And I know General Loremisa would want to come, Mr. Murray, and then, okay, the colleagues, Bugas and Mute. Let me, and then Motise, let me just take them in that order. Thank you so much, General Loremisa.
Thank you. Chairperson, colleagues, and the Defense Force personnel, I think you are going to have problems if you don't get a clarity from the minister and the cabinet as to why the Defense Force is not is excluded from the bill. You need to cover your back. Because if you were to be taken to court and found that there's nothing legal which covers the department, you will be putting the problem, I mean the department, into a serious, serious problem. The other issue I would like to ask is, do you collaborate with one or two countries to train your members? Or at least it's where you can exchange some knowledge. And if so, have you screened that particular country? That it may not in future turn against you and use the information perhaps you provide to them. And lastly, since you have been involved in this exercise, have you come across with people within the establishment, that is defense or DNL, who would be involved in economic espionage or selling our intellectual property rights illegally to the countries, and those to some countries, and those countries use the information to attack us? But I don't think you can just attack any country without having gathered the information from within first, and then you can unleash whatever you want to do. So I'll stop for now.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. My first question is, when last have you presented to this portfolio committee or reported to this portfolio committee? I'm serving from the previous parliament, and I cannot recall once that you were here at this portfolio committee, and this is quite a very, very, very important part, I think, of our work and oversight. Secondly, Constitution Section 200 places a specific constitutional imperative on defence force and the role of the defence force in terms of its role in protecting, you know, the safety and security of our citizens and the role. So that is a clear imperative. And thirdly, in our current environment where we operate the defence force, I was looking for a concept and a word and a message, which is something that you have mentioned on the very last page, and that's force multiplier. We know that we have got budget deficiencies. We know that we cannot properly protect our land borders. We know that we have got huge problems in terms of our maritime borders. And my view was always, cyber technology can be a huge force multiplier, if you know, for both land borders and for sea borders. So I'd like to know, in terms of our current capability and role in that, and to what extent have you looked at that and maybe collaborate, because that's more not an offensive part, but it's part of the defensive part, to make sure that, you know, prior to someone coming in and attack us, that we actually keep them out or are aware of them. I mean, we know that we've got 15 companies on the border. We need probably well over 30. We cannot afford that. And cyber technology can be an alarm going off and say, get on your trucks or your helicopter, go, and there's something going on. We don't know that at the current moment. That's just very important for me. So that part. Then you have mentioned on slides 11 about the cyber defense in Durban and that the cyber defense strategy approved. Now my immediate thought is, now what? So what? What does that mean? What is the status of that? What has happened since then? Has it informed something? Was it just a nice gathering talking about a subject that you all are passionate about, but nothing was really forthcoming from that? That's important for me. Then on slide 25, 24 and 25, what I have read from or listened what you have said is, those are the structures, it's not been approved, so in other words, we don't have that. So can you just, in relation to that, give us an indication, where are we? Because there's one thing about wanting to be there or striving to be there, but there's also another matter of, where are we? You know, that we are not on this wishful thinking and wishful trip. Then on the next one, page 26, I know that we have got the military academy in Saldana, and they have, my knowledge is, they've got a department specifically about cyber technology. You haven't mentioned them. Is there what kind of cooperation? Because, I mean, that's certainly an institute of higher learning that is tightly related to the Department of Defense, and where we can actually send people our own to be trained and educated, and where we invest directly in them, get them back. To what extent are they involved? And if they're involved, Chair, there's maybe some people that we should also interact, because that's not private sector, that's Defense Force. So it's under the command and all that. So so I just wanted to learn from that. And then, as I've said specifically, you know, Section 200 in terms of national interest, and specifically I need to know force multipliers. Because remember, operation, the ocean economy, PAKISA, is a government strategy, and we currently know that we are being poached, and everywhere fish and everything that happened, and there's hardly a protection or a support for them. Thank you very much, sir.
Ms. Peters.
Chair, mine is I don't see the page numbers, but if we look at what the plan want to achieve, and since the approval of the strategy in 2018, what happened? You have an implementation plan? Did you present the plan to defense? What is the cause of this plan? Then I don't know this question, but what is the stance of the department on the plan? Secondly, Chair, we might not need 90,000 to protect ourselves, but what do you think is the minimum tire, the tier of tire, according to you? Because I don't think 100 will work. Then my third one, Chair, is the success factions. Looking to your indicators, what is your program for awareness? How are you planning to popularize the concept? Not that it is not important, but for us to be on the same page and to understand the seriousness of this project or program. Then if you look at page 8, develop and implement accredited training programs for members of the South African National Defense Force. How are you planning to identify, screen and vet those who go for the training? Because it must be people with the right mindset. Then my last one, Chair, is on page 24. We want to go from good to great. So, where are you seeing this, and what is the time frame? Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Mutle, thanks. Mr.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Good morning to colleagues. And we welcome the presentation. Firstly, Chair, I would like to find out from the team led by Major General here, as to, in terms of the first slide of a pyramid shown there, where do they want to see themselves in terms of capabilities to mitigate those threats, and by when? Because if they want to see themselves at the top, by when do they want to have those capabilities? Because I think it's an ideal situation. Seated where they are seated does not really assist, because when we will have confidence and say we have the capabilities is when they are at the top of the pyramid in terms of mitigating any kind of threat that might come our way. Now, the other question, Chair, is with regard to, because now we are dealing with the strategy that they are presenting. The question is the implementation of the very same strategy so that we achieve our ultimate goal. How far are they in terms of the implementation, or when are they envisaging, if they've started with the, if they can give a brief progress, if there's any progress with regard to that. And they also spoke about skills that they need. Just want to find out what is their recruitment strategy process that they undertake to ensure that they attract the necessary skill. Do they apply the very same process that the USA applied when they take somebody who attacked them? I doubt if there is those kind of incidents happening at 12-year in South Africa attacking some. We might not be aware, but if there are such incidences, do you see that as a threat and turn it to an opportunity and recruit that particular person to be part of your team? If that is not the case, what recruitment processes do you undertake to ensure that you have the best of the best in terms of the skills that you are looking for? Do you collaborate with universities, so forth and so on, research institutions that specialize in the kind of field or features that you are really looking for to strengthen your capabilities? Now, there was a, you made, just made mention that there was an, to some extent, an attack on AMSCO. Now, I would want us to be taken into confidence to what extent did that attack cause damage, or to what extent was the damage caused at AMSCO, and has there been, are those weaknesses being addressed? And at this stage, are we certain that AMSCO is protected and that casualty will not reoccur? Lastly, Chair, which might not be in line with the strategy, but probably the plan, is the cyber. What plans do you have in terms of augmenting the capabilities of the 15 units that we have on the borderline? For an example, covering some areas that the 15 units are unable to cover with drones to ensure that the entire borderline is covered, or augment their capabilities. For an example, in the DRC, our troops are using the, what do you call it, the Rafale, as an augmenting those capabilities to ensure that they are safeguarded both on land and on air. So what are your plans? Because we can't continue to cry foul that we don't, the budget is a challenge, we all know about that, but to what an extent is your capabilities assisting? Because you don't need, you will not need more than 15 if you have drones that are assisting at that particular space, because technology in its nature will then mean that we'll have to reduce the number of companies at the borderline if you enter that space and ensure that you use those capabilities optimal. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. No, it's fine. Modisa was the last person to make a question before I take the second round. She's out for now. May I now invite you to respond? You did ask about the status of the cybercrime bill. It was passed by National Assembly. That was in November 2018, and then referred to the NCOP. It lapsed at NCOP in May, and has since been resuscitated. I think it's now before the Select Committee on Justice and Security. That is cyber crime bill. All right, over to Mr. Chinara.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. And responding to the various questions posed, I would also kindly request permission to invite members of my team to also from time to time chip in and perhaps assist where maybe they feel there's a need to do so. And then thank you, Honorable Chair, for the clarity with regards to the cybercrime bill. I wish to assure Honorable Odomisa that indeed we will follow up this matter to try and make sure that, because it's an outstanding matter, it still has to be finalized, the cyber security bill. From our side, we commit ourselves to fight tooth and nail to ensure that that part that relates to the defense, especially that clause 55, is brought back to the cyber security bill. Do we collaborate with other countries? Yes, we do. Perhaps to be more specific in this regard, we have cooperated at least with one country in terms of training, and that country has been the Socialist Republic of Cuba. And perhaps to give the rationale as to why specifically Cuba, I want to believe that perhaps the most obvious answer would be that Cuba had assisted us during, you know, the difficult times of the liberation struggle and so on. But in my personal view is that it goes beyond that. It goes to talk to the issue of the approach that Cuba itself is utilizing. Here you have a country with minimal resources, but being able to protect itself somehow. But I think we also need not be, and pardon me for the use of the word, fooled. We need not be fooled into believing that necessarily they would have protected themselves quite effectively. The reason, among others, is that there's a low level of interconnectivity in Cuba because they don't have so many computers, so many cell phones, so many, you know, they're not so connected to the internet. And therefore, it reduces the vulnerability. But in spite of that, the few levels of whatever interconnectivity exists, they've made it a point that they are able to protect it. And as I indicated, with minimal resources. So partly we also felt that we may perhaps have something to learn from them. Should our economy not perform so well to a point where our resources are not enough or adequate to achieve some of the things we wish to achieve as a best case scenario, you need to revert to methods that allow you to use the minimum that you have to achieve the maximum objectives. So the whole force multiplier concept comes in there. So that's one of the reasons why. In terms of screening those involved in currently, we do not necessarily do any specific screening in this regard. We are just guided by our own analysis that at least at this particular juncture, Cuba does not have any hegemonic, you know, ambitions. So they are just simply kind of helping for now. but we need to be able to monitor should they begin to develop those global ambitions, then perhaps you may then begin to want to exercise more caution. In terms of people being involved in economic espionage, we believe that this is existing in South Africa. We haven't been able to pinpoint individuals specifically. We also believe that in some instances, or rather to a great extent, there's more a problem of negligence and lack of awareness that enables, you know, cyber and hacktivists to attack in our systems, more than it is a case of South Africans collaborating with external forces. But I must indicate that I think it was last year when Dinel was actually attacked and the information was retrieved from Dinel. I must indicate that from the Defense Intelligence, we had been able to detect that something is going to happen. We didn't know exactly what it is and where exactly it was going to happen. But we were able to detect that a particular, what we would call a group of cyber mercenaries, had been, or rather their services had been procured by one of the Arab states for purposes of hacking into our systems. And we believe that this particular country is one of the small countries in the Gulf states that hired the services of, in our view, of the of this cyber mercenary grouping to attack South Africa. What was detected was this advert, which was in the dark web, to say so many million dollars for anyone who can do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for us. And that indicated South Africa. They don't necessarily use exactly the same term to say denial South Africa, but we could decipher that this is likely to happen, you know, within our defense environment. But which specific entity, we're not quite certain. So when Dinel was attacked, it only became clear then that this probably was what was, you know, being advertised at the time. So, but again, it's largely because of our limited capability. If we had more people monitoring on a broad scale, we could probably be able to detect this and then mitigate this particular attacks before they could take place. So yes, indeed, maybe the answer would be there is economic espionage using cyber that is involved, but we haven't been able to always detect beforehand, or at least to pinpoint individuals involved in this regard. When last have we presented to this portfolio committee in relation to cyber security? This is our first time. This is the first time that we present. We presented to the Joint Standing Committee the last time, not to the Portfolio Committee. It was 2018 when we presented to the Joint Standing Committee. We had just developed the strategy and it has just been approved at the time. So for the Portfolio Committee, it's the first time. And I must say, I must convey our gratitude for being given the opportunity to come and present here. Indeed, we also perceive the cyber security and cyber technology as a force multiplier, both for defense and also for economic purposes. Hence, we refer to it as a strategic reserve, you know, for the Commander-in-Chief. Much as we are busy on a daily basis protecting our system, should the Commander-in-Chief at any given time wish us to employ cyber defense or cyber security capabilities for some kind of cyber warfare, we will be able to do that. But that's not what we tell our people to do. So in essence, we develop capacity that should South Africa need, you know, to do certain things, we should be able to do that. How, to what extent can this be utilized in terms of border security and maritime security? Again, as I indicated earlier on, that we have developed a limited security operations center within the Navy. It was precisely because of that We could have easily chosen the Air Force and focused on the Army, but it was precisely because of that that we wanted to develop capacity within the Navy. But I must also indicate that in terms of border security management, we also have developed defense intelligence, not necessarily the cyber command, but defense intelligence working together with the Joint Operations Division, have developed a sensor strategy, which is aimed at looking at what sensor capabilities can be utilized. Sensor being anything that does not have to come in direct control with the human being, that can detect from a distance, be it a radar, be it cameras, or anything that can detect from a distance. And this is what some of these are encompassed in that sensor strategy. I mean, just before coming here, we were talking partly about this, and I was saying, for example, that on a single day, if you were to send one of these hot air balloons, and if it can reach the height of about a kilometer or a kilometer and a half, the area with the arc of sight, or the area of the area that will be visible for you with proper cameras is so wide that in actual fact you don't need to have troops down there. You can literally indicate the specific grid reference, so many people are approaching, you get, you know, people to respond to that, arrest them and so on, so that you don't necessarily have troops, you know, necessarily patrolling and so on. Those people just simply wait. They know if they go that way, it will take them so much time to come back. So as they turn the corner, they actually jump in, and, you know. So we're looking at all those possibilities. And this one was just simply by way of an example. The Americans, for example, use ground sensors, you know, which can tell as a group of human beings are actually approaching, that the group is approaching from a particular, you know, they've got a direction finding capability, distance from where they are right now, and how many could they be, you know. The only problem comes when a group of animals passes by, then you can also respond to that. But but you rather respond to animals than to sit and not know that there's something is happening, you know. So we're looking at all those kind of technologies that can be utilized, you know, to enhance border security and border maritime security. If you need to add something. To what extent do you consider a question was asked also in relation to what has happened since the approval of the structure, of the cyber command. Of the strategy, sorry, yes. The directorate within defense intelligence that is entrusted with the responsibility of establishing the cyber command is a directorate called cyber operations. So it's directorate cyber operations. The 100 plus we are talking about are people who have been trained and developed by this very same directorate. So we haven't stopped since then. We have continued largely with the issues of training for members of the cyber defense directorate cyber operations, or rather the cyber command. And since then, we have been able to establish a security operations center, which is located at AMSCO building. I think it came out also on the defense web of 2019, last year. Yes. And as I also indicated, we have also established another security operations center within the Navy. In the course of this year, we hope to establish and expand some of these security operations centers. But we also hope to establish a security operations center within the Air Force and the Military Health Services. The tendency here is that sometimes people feel that cyber is not applicable to the military health environment. But the reality is, you can be killed whilst lying in a hospital. You know, a good example could be, and in actual fact, I was just watching a film some few days ago, if I may be allowed to just make that particular analogy. I was watching a film on Channel 117, CSI, Cyber. Here you had a doll, you know, the doll. But it's a talking doll, so it can communicate with the kid. Somebody hacked into that doll, and started speaking to the child. And the child was responding to the doll was talking back. And the doll requested the child to say, please, can you make sure that when you go to sleep, you open a particular window for me? And the child was saying, no, but I'm not supposed to open the window. Please. And because it's the friend persuading, the child opened the door, opened that particular window. On that evening, somebody entered and killed the father of that particular child. You know, it's a small, example, but it shows the extent to which this can be utilized for all sorts of malicious purposes, you know. So yes, we have continued to make sure that we train our people in this regard. And we've also, we continuously engage CSIR, for example, and as well as AMSCO to acquire space for locating certain capabilities and also, storage of some of our equipment. So we are continuing with certain activities without necessarily having to wait for the approval of the structure.
Just a quick addition in response to this question. The Cyber Security Response Committee, which is chaired by the SSA, has also continued working in building on these capabilities. A number of task teams have been set up, for instance, an integrated cyber security center where the standard operating procedures that the General referred to are now in place being formalized. The National Cyber Security Strategy, which uses this strategy as its basis, is also now undergoing consultation. There's been international engagement, for instance, dealing with what some people would refer to as the U.S. Unilateralism challenges, monitoring the trade war between China and the U.S. and its effects, monitoring elections, learning from what happened in the U.S. around Cambridge Analytica and the hacking of the U.S. election campaign using social media. So there have been a number of other activities that the Cyber Command has been involved in very centrally in coordination with the other state entities, which is why then the response to some of the incidents is now increasingly being coordinated.
Talking of hacking, why do you always win elections?
Thank you, Mr. Mavaso. Perhaps also maybe just to emphasize another point, as Mr. Mavaso touched on the issue of the Cyber Security Response Committee, which is chaired by the SSA, without necessarily seeming to be bragging or blowing our own horns, we also believe that we are playing a very, very crucial role in that particular entity. And Mr. Mavaso is our representative there. Most of the ideas adopted there have their origins within the defense. I'm not suggesting that all of them, but to a great extent, we have been able to influence the direction that the Cyber Security Response Committee takes. And then one of the questions also asked had to do with the numbers, the minimum that we believe is needed for us to be at least at the right place. For now, we had come to the conclusion that in the event that our economy does not allow any further resources to be directed towards the development of the Cyber Command, at least if we could have the structure that we showed there, and this is the high level part of the structure, it's not necessarily broken down. It amounts to about 392 people. But, again, this needs to be explained properly. because it's 392 of a high level grouping, meaning people who can operate of that 392. We are targeting at least tier 3 right up to tier 6, so that tier 1 and 2 can be left to, in the case of the defense, we also have another structure called the Command Management and Information Service, CMIS, which deals with network security. And the tier 1 and 2 are more at the level of network, as opposed to what you would really call your hardcore cyber. So what we are looking at is that the cyber commands need to take responsibility of the higher level, or higher tiers of the pyramid, so that the CMIS can actually continue doing some of the activities that they are actually doing. And by the way, in terms of this whole structure, we envisage an integration between the CMIS and the cyber command to a point where you actually don't have the CMIS, but in actual fact, you will be having people performing the current duties of the CMIS. And we also foresee the cyber command feeding itself from the current command management and information services, because they're already trained in IT. So why go out there and look for other people who can take diverse members, train them in other levels of cyber security, and make them cyber warriors, which is where the difference is. The cyber warriors are found as tier 5 and 6, you know, and this is the area which we should aim towards. Excuse me. If we could mitigate and respond to threats posed by these two levels, then at least we'll say, we can say that we are, as a country, in a good space. But I must also indicate that in terms of the strategy, cyber security awareness becomes a very, very critical aspect. And we don't see this being done only by the defense. It needs to be done at a national level. Amongst other things, we need to be seeing this coming out a lot more on television, so that you create that national side that is, you know, creates the awareness in terms of the threats posed by cybersecurity. And then the other one was, that was related to the program of awareness. Yes. Yes, the military academy, I'm not sure, I think you're referring to the Cyber Security Institute. Yes. We do have some of our members are actually training via the, although it's distance, but via the Cyber Security Institute within the military academy. So in essence, yes, we are utilizing that particular capability. Maybe not to the level that we should, perhaps. It's a matter of resources, again, that tends to keep coming in. But also in terms of specific, how can I call it, capabilities that you may want to develop. Sometimes we have to rely on some other institutions for that purpose. But we do utilize the Cyber Security Institution, Institute. Accredited training, screening and vetting. There was also a question on how do we screen currently the members that we employ and train for purposes of cybersecurity. Within the Department of Defense, there is a vetting process for all the members, not necessarily cybersecurity members. So as a starting point, members, there's a pre-screening process that starts before a member comes into the system, and then a vetting system that goes that takes place when a member is already in the system. However, the vetting process is based on what posts you are occupying. So, for argument's sake, just to make a very nasty example, if someone smokes dacha, the impact is not exactly the same if that person is a pilot, or if that person is a rifleman. The impact is not the same, you know, because the one up there can create more damage than actually a rifleman, you know. But a rifleman also can be a problem because you can shoot other members. You know, there could be fratricide. So it impacts differently. So the point I'm making is we vet you in accordance with your post. So in essence, members here are already vetted. Most of them have got security clearances. However, vetting is supposed to be continuous. So the fact that we trust you today does not mean that you are going to be trustworthy for the next coming 20 years. We trust you now, but tomorrow there could be factors that could influence you to change. And vetting has to be continuous. And I must say that this is where we have a limitation as an organization. Because the resources required for one to conduct that continuous vetting sometimes are a bit of a challenge. But we are looking into that. I must perhaps indicate that in collaboration with AMSCO and partly also in collaboration with CSIR, in collaboration with AMSCO, we have developed a system of what we call e-vetting. Yes. Which can enable us to speed up the process of vetting up to the level of confidential security clearance, which forms the bulk, by the way, of the Defense Force clearances. Although you want to target the security, the secret and the top secret clearances, but at least you need to find a way of speeding up the confidential ones. So yes, we are looking at this matter and are trying to address it also. Oh yes, I was just saying it, but I don't know what I'm talking about. The time frame for us to move from good to great, we believe that this can be done within a period of 3 years. We believe that if resources are provided and support is given, you know, we can reach at least the bare minimum that you're talking about in relation to the structure that was presented today, that we can achieve that structure within a period of 3 years. But it would mean that we may not necessarily be great globally, but at least in relation to the whole continent, we can then count a few countries, maybe Rwanda, perhaps Egypt, maybe Algeria to some extent, maybe those can be the countries we can compete with. But at least we can be able to be amongst, you know, the best. But in terms of the tier 6 and tier 5 threats, we should be able at that level, at that point, to be able to mitigate those. But again, it would require a number of aspects that are listed in the strategy itself. Collaboration with institutions of research and institutions of higher learning, collaborations with South African defense industry, private sector, and everybody else. So it's not just the command, the cyber command alone. It's almost perhaps the issue of the battle and the war. You know, I believe that battles are won by soldiers, but wars are won by nations. Because a war requires national, you know, galvanizing national resources, not just military resources and defense resources only. So this particular war also, in the context of cyber warfare, for us to be defended, you need the whole nation to brace itself for that and work towards that. Where do we want to see ourselves in terms of the pyramid? We want to see ourselves at the level of tier 6. We want to be able to operate at that level because this is the level where states are crippled. Tier 1 and 2 departments are affected temporarily, you know, here and there, and individuals are affected temporarily. But tier 5 and 6, this is where countries, state-to-state warfare starts taking place. And this is where we should guard ourselves and be able to protect ourselves from a cyber point of view. And when, how much time, when can we get there? We said to achieve the bare minimum, at least it's 3 years. But the best case scenario will take definitely far more than that. How far can you implement this strategy?
And I think I've addressed part of this in terms of what we have done so far in terms of training of members, in terms of developing, seeking to develop certain capabilities and so on, in terms of the implementation of the strategy. We are moving forward in that regard. Hence the ability to respond, for example, to the attack that took place at the South African Civil Association Authority. The recruitment strategy is to acquire the necessary skills. Again, cybersecurity as a concept requires at national level, requires a national mindset. Government needs to have a very clear understanding of what it needs to do or it wants to do with the cyber capability, cyber security and so on and so on. And therefore, invest accordingly. What we are doing right now, because of the fact that the resources are limited, we are recruiting from within the Department of Defense itself. As I indicated earlier on, that we have an entity called the Command Management and Information Services, which deals with IT and network security. And this is the entity that we feed from. You take those people, train them further, courses, give them courses that they haven't done, and then utilize them within the cyber security environment. But I was referring to the issue of the national mindset because, just an abstract example, for example, you may find that there was a young man or a young lady who was arrested maybe for defrauding a particular bank, maybe ABSA or Standard Bank or whatever, and that person is somewhere languishing in prison. And we're not utilizing those capabilities because he's a criminal. But the reality is that he has the capability that we need. Why is it that we can't, for an example, in prison, give them a task to research something? We don't need them to hack anybody else, but give them a task to do some research or to do whatever. Because he has the capability. He has shown that he has the capability. You know? And I'm deliberately making this because I know it's not one of those popular type of approaches. But I'm trying to show that sometimes we may have to be a bit unconventional. This person is a South African. Even if he's a criminal, he's a South African citizen. So in essence, he's a South African resource.
I know you get passionate
on this. And maybe just the last two questions. One was on the attack on arms code. This was in 2016. And I'll let Mr. Mabaso respond to that. The next one was about what plans do we have in terms of border security. I think I did respond to this in terms of the central strategy.
To touch on force multipliers.
Yes, I'll then give Mr. Mabaso to explain on the attack on arms code.
Mr. Mabaso?
Yes. The 2016 attack used a silly vulnerability on the arms code side, what they call a SQL attack, so structured query language is a language is used for database management. So it used an opening on our externally facing website where suppliers submit their information so that we can pay them to make the submission of the form pretend like it's a program. I can get into the details about that. There is a report. That particular hole was actually identified as early as 2008, and we were shocked that a hole that was identified as early as 2008, highlighted again during an audit report in 2015, had not been fixed in 2016. It has since been closed. The website has been covered. However, we are not confident enough that we can deal with tier 6 and 5 level attacks. And we're saying that because at the back of the city of Joburg attack, for instance, we found that there was a possibility that whoever attacked them may have been sitting on the environment for a long time. Whereas the 2016 attack, whoever hit us, announced it and showed how they'd come in. So it was really to cause the effect was embarrassment. And maybe it allows me to touch on a question around the recruitment. One of the ways you recruit people is not necessarily to look out for criminals, but you announce bounties. So some of the big companies do that. They say, we believe we've reached a certain level of security. We invite people to come and breach our security under these conditions. And whoever succeeds to find holes, etc., and disclose these will be paid. Who discloses those holes will be paid a certain bounty. And people who then respond to those bounties become the source of the recruitment. Elon Musk, a few weeks ago, had another nice recruitment drive where he hosted a hackathon at his home, where he got top programmers to come and write elegant programs to solve problems. And that's how we then identify. So we're looking at all of these. But we've been very lucky. I think Ishmael's team was interviewing graduates from some of the neighboring universities. I looked at the CVs, passed with distinction from first year right up to third, fourth year. So we're finding some exciting talent. And in fact, on that note, we said we lost one of our interns a few weeks ago from a heart failure who's also been doing very well. So those are the means we use for.
On a follow-up, because the answers are not necessarily the same. Major General is saying we are recruiting from inside. Is that the only option, or also that option is considered where you invite academics who are excelling in that particular, because I don't think that skill will only be built within the defense force itself. Otherwise, we'll allow sharp skills to be outside there and being used by private. Whilst we must, it is our responsibility to ensure that we recruit that particular skill so that we advance our capabilities within. Because I think it's recruiting from internally only, I don't think we'll reach the level that we want to reach only, because there are people with great minds who are natural programmers who are not within the defense.
Yeah, no, I think they said they are limited by the availability of funds that they have to recruit from outside. But funds permitting, they would want to recruit more people. But you are right, they must look at that. I still have two hands to look at. Just before I recognize those two hands, I had a meeting with one Vice Chancellor, who says to me, look, as universities, we supervise masters and PhD students who at the end, produce thesis. And but their worry as people in these institutions is that this thing ends up gathering dust in their libraries, because government that should actually be one of the people who are using the information that is available, they don't tap into it. It's government that subsidizes these universities, subsidizes the production of this knowledge. But it's, when it's out there, it's us who simply walk parallel to it. In other words, it's the extent to which we utilize the information that is already available to develop our own capabilities as government. Perhaps it's an issue for another day. I had Modise, I'll come back to you for a follow-up, Mr. Mare. I had Modise, Mr. Mafanya, and then Mr. Mare, and then General. Yeah, maybe in your comments, colleagues, just indicate, now we've taken this presentation, and then where to from here, so that we guide each other as we move forward. It's a new area. It's one matter that has not received adequate attention, and yet is very critical. just guide us how to then move from where we are now. Ms. Motisa, I'll start with you, Mr. Mafanya, and then Mare, and then the General. Thanks. In that order, please. But, no, thank you so much, Mr. Mafanya.
Thank you very much, my colleagues. Seeing that it is the first time that we also come here equally, so it's also my first time to be here. So probably we are swimming in the same pot. I would like to read something for you guys. The Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, that's CSIR, is promoting its wide array of cyber defense and security offerings, including a cyber test range, network stimulator, and cyber vulnerability detector. The Council Cyber Range is a visualized environment with sensors that collect network data, hardware and software behavior, and user interactions as a testbed for cyber experts, or as a training stimulator for incoming cybersecurity engineers. So what it tells us, we've got people. They're very talented that we aspire to have. Now, there's also the Military Institute in Saldanha that does the same thing. And there's also Institutes of Higher Learning where there are people as well. Now, in the presentation, I expected you to be more focused on this one, so that whenever these people want to deploy their services, they apply to you to say, we are looking for work. Unlike you going to find out, because we already have a home-based institute, that's the CSIR, including when you look at AMSCO itself, it says here, AMSCO, the Defense Acquisition Agency, has created an in-house cybersecurity and which plans to develop a globally competitive cyber warfare capability that will be a strategic reserve for the South African National Defense Force. So my worry is that we may even go to an extent of duplicating services here, which will also be a waste of money. That we also want to say that there is a need for budget allocations and all that, all the same things that are already there. So that is the only thing that I wanted to highlight, Chair. Thanks.
So that it did not indicate where you are reading that from. It's from this document, I guess. It was prepared by the researcher, our researcher.
Oh, your
researcher? Yes, our researcher, yes.
Our committee researcher,
yeah. Just basically to say what is already happening to assist the committee in asking questions. Mr. Marie?
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you so much for the answer so far. My first observation is, some of my worst fears you have actually confirmed, and that is that, you know, in terms of a force multiplier on our borders and maritime borders, we've got a huge challenge, and I think that's something that and you touched on the examples, precisely what I've said. You know, you need to identify, and with the limited resources that we've got, we need to use our forces as reactionary forces to go and go. It's been identified, go and do something. And cyber is not something that patrols. It's constantly there. So you constantly monitor 100% of the border and not only a certain portion. And that is that thing we need to develop. And you're only talking about sensors. My concern is sensors might be old technology. Talk about fourth generation technology. That is the kind of technology that we need, you know, as an insurance policy for our nation and our economy. So that's the first point. My second one is, you've answered to a certain extent the general in terms of international collaboration, but given that you've said that we can easily do levels 1 and 2, and to a certain extent levels 3, and maybe some of levels 4. But to get to level 5 and 6, we can't do it, and you've acknowledged that. So to what extent are there collaboration with other nations? We are one of the countries with probably one of the most military and defense attachés in South Africa.
So clearly there are enormous amount of nations that has got an interest in South Africa and where we are on the tip of Africa. So to what extent are there collaboration to deal with those threats and capabilities on 5 and 6? Because my next point is for us to move from easily 1 and 2 and portionally the other two to a 5 and 6, you need probably a substantial increase in budget. Now, we've used the words budget, but there was no figures. So to what extent can you provide us with current budget to do only what you can do now, but then also phases of budget of how to move a little bit up and how to move eventually to 5 and 6? Because, I mean, you know what our economic constraints are at the moment. And somewhere we must be put into a position and to say, when we interact with both the department and with National Treasury, we can properly apply our mind with the information from you to say that as a force multiplier, as a strategic important thing, how can we, I don't want to say move around money, but how can we, and the minister said last week in Parliament that reprioritization is something that we will have to look at. And in my opinion, I've always thought that cyber technology and capability is a critical strategy for us to follow and to, you know, explore. So can you provide us with that information? And then lastly, many countries use satellite technology. At one stage, there were satellites being launched, South African satellites being launched, either as part of from Russia or from where it was launched. There was also a Project Flute at one stage, and we know about that. So to what extent are we involved in satellite capability? And I mean, you know, there are many stories about Flute, that the Flute actually gave us something, because that will give you the technology, and that we know is what other nations are using, is satellites. And I mean, you know, they control attacks on the other side of the globe via satellites. So to what extent are that in our capability, or, you know, to a lesser extent or a larger extent, and to what extent are we looking for that as well? But budget is obviously the crucial thing, and you must empower us with the information and the knowledge to be able to take it forward. Thank you very much.
The General? Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is gonna be slightly bit different, but the aim is to empower the members of Parliament and yourselves as to, when you look into this, you need to look at the stage where you discuss threat analysis to the country. I raised this sensitive issue deliberately based on what you told us, that Rwanda, for instance, is far ahead of us on these issues, precisely because it's being trained by Israel. And South Africa has been dubbed as a country or an axis for terrorist people. They obtain passports here. We have been classified as a threat in some of these countries. I mentioned Rwanda because Rwanda undermined the authority of South Africa or the integrity of this country when they had the guts to come and assassinate one of their generals here. So if those people would be given, empowered with such knowledge as a way of retaliation, they can still target some of our areas, sensitive areas on this fiber. It's just a thought. Maybe in the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, which is not public, you could dwell more on this, or if you are summoned to go and brief the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence,
at least there the people have been screened, and that committee could be free to tell us where are we, so that they can take the process directly with the president to say, this is the need, we need to get more resources on this. I'm not comfortable with the behavior of Rwanda.
Okay, yeah, now over to you. They clearly is the need for more resources to be given to be dedicated to this program. At the moment, it doesn't look like we anywhere nearer to receiving, you know, something that, you know, would bring them to any situation of respectability. If they're not at that level, it means that as a country we're not at that level as well. So I think it's a matter that we need to urgently attend to. When they present the budget, we must start to zoom in into this particular area. In other words, not that we don't, the conventional ways or means are not important. They're still important, but this one is even more important because it does appear that the threats now are now increasing at this level. So it's a matter that we need to focus on. And two, I think as a portfolio committee, we also need to gather more information. What you have presented to us, in my view, is still very basic. And because we have not reached that level where we become of sophistication, you know. And I know there are countries that have, you know, that we can, I mean, it's just that I don't know when the committee would be invited to make a submission for proposals on a study tour. But I think it's a matter, I'm sure we must identify one country where we think I'm sure with your assistance, can expose us to even more information on the matters cyber. And I think the committee must start to just, I'm sure, would also depend on the research people researching in that area and suggesting and making a proposal to us as to the country that we should visit to, you know, give us more, to inspire us, I mean, and give us more information, or enlighten us on matters cyber. So I thought I should, you know, say those things because, and three, there's a university that is very close to us. I mean, this University of Stellenbosch, I mean, it trains our people. They have a program that they are inviting us to attend. I will read that letter shortly. It started to take interest in matters cyber, you know. And but they must not find us uninterested, you know, because they would say, but the state, this is what is happening in the world, but South Africa seem not to be, you know, inspired or excited by these things, and the threat is that we'll wake up when it is already too late to do anything, and as a country. Yet we, during those days, apartheid, because of sanctions and all that, we became, as a country, we were self-reliant and we built all this capability. And unfortunately, now it's slipping away from us. I don't know whether it's because we think we're not facing any threat or threats, but that's an issue. So I thought we should look at that these universities, check what they have, even if it means inviting people who have produced work on this to come and just give us a briefing, so that we are also at that level of information. So, colleagues, I thought I should just say that I think now you just answered the question, and then you gave us your closing remarks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just wish to also indicate that I did touch on it, perhaps I didn't elaborate, but we do have a relationship with CSIR, the Center for Scientific and Industrial Research, to the extent that Defense Intelligence has regular sort of strategic meetings, with CSIR. Amongst others, the issue of cyber does come up. And perhaps the cyber range that they are referring to a great extent, is actually utilized by the defense. Not only by the defense, but to a great extent by the defense. Mostly some of the members of the Command and Management Information Services, the CMIS, there's a component called the Directorate for Information Warfare. And there's a bit of a challenge within the DoD itself, and perhaps in South Africa as a country, that we have a tendency of demarcating some of these things. You know, we see a difference between cybersecurity and information warfare. Perhaps one day a day will come when we realize that all of this, anything with an electronic chip nyana somewhere, falls within the category of cyber. And somehow we tend to see ourselves as different because, no, we are within cyber command, we are information warfare. But what's the difference? All of these things is one and the same thing. So these are some of the hurdles that I think as a defense we would need to overcome so that we can be able to say we should see each other as one and the same thing. So yes, there's close interaction between the very fact that I'm here with members from AMSCO should actually be testimony enough that there is interaction between ourselves and AMSCO. We just don't have members of CSIR here, but we do interact with them quite strongly. Yes.
Just a short, quick addition to this one. Defense actually funded the creation of the cyber range, so the collaboration continues right from that stage. But there are also exercises that get carried out, for instance, the Capture the Flag exercise, where the teams get into a mock cyber war and they do that. So there is a lot of that. But I wanted to also add CETA, the State IT Agency. There's a lot of capabilities there that we're finding are underutilized. There's a push right now by one of the companies from one of the countries that we adopt their cloud infrastructure. Yet CETA has created a secure private cloud that it can fully control and further envisionize. So there's an effort based on a decision from the Cyber Security Response Committee that government partners be directed towards that. Then there's ongoing research, for instance, on areas of artificial intelligence using quantum physics and properties of light to come up with unhackable encryption systems. One of the things that we're hoping to do is to start certifying different academic institutions as centers of excellence for cybersecurity, based on their combining their excellent academic work with the strict requirements of a defense and an intelligence environment. So there are those areas, and I think that summary that was prepared by the researchers helped answer the earlier question of what has been happening in between. The problem is due to one limited capacity and just limited coordination. Some of these things are not communicated as elegantly and as articulately as they should. And there's, at this stage, less of a risk of duplication and more of a risk of a shortage of resources. We saw that with the city of Joburg, for example. The CSR has been helping with the city of Joburg, yet when it's, the city was hit, the state was still under its lines, despite the CSR having given warnings, because I think there were other players out there, for some of the private companies.
Thank you. And perhaps maybe the inputs made by Mr. Mawas right now highlights another point, as Honorable Chair had indicated earlier on, that you have people doing their PhDs, they, you know, write on issues of cybersecurity, and whatever they would have written there ends up, you know, gathering dust. This speaks to the issue of the mindset as a nation, national policy. What are we saying as a country when such resources are being developed? You know, as a country, we need to have a very clear policy so that you don't find such individuals developing, you know, PCs and then, you know, nothing is done about that. I'm quite certain that if we could do a full study of how many South Africans or how many, you know, IPs or intellectual properties that were are supposed to be South African, that have been sold externally by individual South Africans. I'm not talking about people working for Dinel or for AMSCO. I'm talking about individual South Africans who goes to country X because South Africa has not been interested in what they are doing, and they end up going wherever, sell it. Mark Shuttleworth, but I mean, right now, Mr. Mabaso is talking about the professor who discovered that it is possible to use quantum physics to protect and, you know, encrypt some of the systems. The issue is this information and this knowledge is in South Africa. What are we doing about it? Who has invested in trying to do something about this? Soon we will be buying technology coming from China, from Russia, from France, from Germany, that is actually coming from South Africa. So it's important that as a nation we really, you know, develop some kind of policy that says anyone who comes up with, if one could make an example, when Vladimir Putin took over Russia the first term, on his first term, one of the first things that he did, and I'm not suggesting that this is the best thing to do, but I'm just trying to show what other nations are doing. One of the first things that he did was to declare that all companies that deal with IT are going to be state-owned. And those that are smaller companies were prevented from selling anything outside. So if you are not state-owned and you remain private, thou shalt not sell any of your products externally without the approval of a central body that looks at what you're developing and checks whether can this be utilized against us in future, you know. And only then can they say you can now sell. Now, I'm saying we can look at something of that nature as a country, without necessarily prohibiting people from doing business, but be able to say, hey, but we think this one, we need it ourselves, you know. So that when somebody writes a thesis that we think, you know, is worthy of exploring further, let's take it and, you know, do something about it. But we need to have an entity that is ready to exploit all of these opportunities that are arising.
And the budget
for it, yes. And therefore, all of this requires national policy to say, how are we going to approach things of this nation? There was also a question on the budget, the current budget and the budget required. This is a bit of a tricky question in the sense that you have Directorate Cyber Operations within defense, which has got its own budget. You then also have Directorate Departmental Security within Defense Intelligence, which links up with Directorate Information Warfare. And then you also have the Command Management and Information Systems, which does network security, tier 1, tier 2 level. And then you have within the department, you also have your arms go and so on and so forth. So to say how much do we have, I believe you'd have to group all these entities and say how much do all of these entities have to try and mitigate cyber threats. And that is the amount that has been given to us. But if the question is specifically about the entity mandated to develop a cyber command, the budget does not exceed 30 million per year, which really isn't much at all. It's just not sufficient at all. And this is the entity that's supposed to develop that structure with our 392 people as a minimum. So how we are going to do it, we don't know, but we believe we'll keep on trying. What is the amount that we require, that we think might be sufficient to develop that particular structure? Yes, this is only personnel only, yes. In terms of the structure that we showed there, the amount is 192,149,881. How did we come to this amount? Because this amount is also not quite...
Maybe you don't have to convince us on that. We just wanted to get a sense.
Okay, okay. Yes. But this is just for personnel remuneration only. We have not yet included issues of equipment and everything else. For the whole plan to be in existence, I mean, for the cyber command to be in existence, our estimation was just approaching about 800 million over a period of 3 years, inclusive of human resource remuneration, inclusive of procurement of facilities, equipment, maintenance, everything else was bordering on about, that was a 2018 estimate, bordering close to about 800 million over a period of 3 years. This is just for the cyber command only.
Sorry, the general wants to make a quick comment.
Why don't you, perhaps, Chairperson, canvass this issue with the Chairperson of Treasury, of it, Finance, Trade and Industry, with a view to organize a conference, try to coordinate. I don't think the state can pay for that. You can ask the Reserve Bank Governor, National Treasury, and the banks themselves to take up that bill. But at least you would have achieved something in terms of coordination and a direction of some kind.
Do you have a conference to discuss issues of cyber security with a view? At the same time, all right. Okay, I think we need to do that as a resolution. I think it must start with us, especially those who are in the security cluster, having and you know, taking a presentation on where we are and what is planned. So that we can then move branch off as a committee. Like for instance, there's this bill that was cyber crime and cyber security. That it ended up being a cyber crime bill, you know, and not cyber crime, and you know, removing that element. It should really concern us as a security cluster within Parliament. Maybe there was a good reason for that to happen then, but why must it take so long to bring it back on the table again? It's an area of concern, and it remains an area of concern. So it must be brought back to on the table as quickly as possible. So it means that we must then touch base with the people who are driving that process to come and brief us. But in this time, acting as a cluster, you know, the security, justice, police, and ourselves, I'm sure Home Affairs as well. But we'll see how we approach it. But of course, there's this bigger thing where we involve people in the private sector who are also as concerned as us, because we're not the only concerned people. They are concerned. And they're most targeted. They're actually vulnerable. But I'm sure everyone now is, because they were not leading, is trying to do his or her little things in their corner and so on. In silos. I don't know whether in the process there are no spy webs. Mm-hmm. The spy webs that get developed and so on in between, because nobody at the center is monitoring everything. I don't know. You know? There's no coordination. I don't know where is this national security to ensure that in the process of people developing their own things, but they don't undermine the security of the country.
If we had National Security Council, these issues would be dealt with there, and be prioritized.
All right, so we'll look at that going forward. You can just close, colleagues.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There was just one question about satellites and whether we are involved in utilizing satellites, satellite technology and so on. Maybe just my response would be to say that with a strong cyber capability, we may actually even need, there'll be less need maybe to even utilize, to try to develop or launch any satellite capability, because we could easily hack into LC and every other satellite technology and make use of it. that was only a lighter note, but also a fact. Without necessarily encouraging us to dirty tricks. But the point of the matter actually here is to suggest that cybersecurity can actually help us do a lot of things and circumvent spending money on things that, you know, would need maintenance over years and so on and so forth, where sometimes we don't even have the skills nationally to even have to go to other countries. So what's important for us is to develop local capabilities, and whatever we do, let's do it as South Africans, you know. The issue of the University of Stellenbosch, I think I've touched on that one. But again, the issue of national policy, as to say, Stellenbosch as a university on its own develops the capacity, you know, the crucial people who can train cybersecurity. Did we as a country decide where to locate this? Did we say Stellenbosch developed this capacity, UNISA don't develop the capacity, we'll all focus on, you know, there are certain things I think we need to drive as a state. State intervention has a lot of room on security matters, and I think we need to be able to make use of that capacity. Thank you very much, and I want to say thank you to the Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee for giving us the opportunity to come and present, and we are ready to present any other time should you need us to come back. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, General, and the team for the presentation. It has certainly enlightened all of us on the issue of cyber security, and we'll certainly take matters up, and because we really are agreeing with you, is one area that the country are lagging behind. And just before we close, colleagues, I received this invitation, and it's I don't know when was it sent through. I got it via Tabo. It was not sent to you, Brian, but it's addressed to the chair. And unfortunately, it's next week, and on the 18th, we have a committee meeting. But you see, it's the Royal Danish Defence College and Security Institute for Governance and Leadership in Africa, SILGA, partnering to revisit the debate on ungoverned spaces as a source of threat, vulnerabilities, and catalyst for extremism and terrorism. And the theme for the event is security governance in African ungoverned spaces, emergent thought, new spaces and responses. It's quite an exciting thing. It's next week. And let's check how many people, colleagues, would be interested to attend this. I'll look at the numbers and then decide what do we want to do with the meeting next week. If colleagues could come back to us before the close of today, so that we can then reschedule, if we have to reschedule anything. Yes, yes, Mr. Mare. Okay. Hey, all right. It looks as though our meeting is threatened for next week. 2-4, and all of us. Okay. Let's talk to this fellow and tell them that we are all interested. Check if they cannot be flexible enough to accommodate us even at this late hour. All right. And so then if we to me and you will decide on the schedule of the meeting for next week. All right. I know your plans have well ahead. Okay, it's fine. Colleagues, with that, let me not hold you any further. Thank you very much for your attention.